Well, the reminder this morning from Pat of Sarah Cotton and Aubrey and Chloe and the terrible, terrible events of Christmas 2 years ago couldn't be more appropriate than for this day. You know, sometimes people accuse me of being of a somewhat gloomy nature, but you can't get much more oddly gloomy than our gospel reading this morning from Matthew. And it's very, very counterintuitive. After all of the frothy, bubbly, excited, enthusiastic energy of Christmas, that suddenly, we are whacked up the side of the head and told, when Herod saw that he'd been tricked by the wise men, he was infuriated, and he sent and killed all the children in and around Bethlehem who were 2 years old and under. It's called the slaughter of the innocents. And a few days after Christmas, you kind of got to wonder who wants to go to church and hear a story about the slaughter of the innocents. But it's an important story. Whatever happened historically, who knows the details? It doesn't really matter. What's important, though, is for us to see, I think, just how extraordinarily complex and complicated life is. You need a little bit of the backstory to appreciate this to some degree. Matthew's Gospel, chapter 2, started out saying, now after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of Herod the king, behold, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem saying, where is he who has been born king of the Jews? For we saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him. When Herod the king heard this, he was troubled and all Jerusalem with him. And assembling all the chief priests and scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Christ was to be born. They told him, in Bethlehem of Judea. Then Herod summoned the wise men secretly and ascertained from them what time the star had appeared. And he sent them to Jerusalem, saying, go and search diligently for the child. So how did Herod know who he wanted to kill and when, what ages of children he wanted to kill? Matthew's gospel is very clear. When Herod saw that he'd been tricked by the wise men, he was infuriated. And he sent and killed all the children in and around Bethlehem who were 2 years old or under, according to the time that he had learned from the wise men. How wise was that? How wise were they to have blabbed all over Jerusalem that they were looking for a king? And then to have gone into the very presence of Herod and informed him of where it was they were going to search diligently for this child. And for them to become, their actions, it appears from the story, to become the direct connection to this tragic and painful event that Matthew recounts. And so Matthew says, a voice was heard in Ramah, wailing and loud lamentation. Rachel weeping for her children. She refused to be consoled because they are no more. This Sunday that is called the Slaughter of the Innocents could equally well be called Pain Sunday. It's a story filled with pain and anguish and suffering and injustice. Everything about this story is simply wrong. The unintended consequences of the actions of wise men, the horrific, despotic, tyrannical rule of Herod, it's all wrong. The innocence and the vulnerability of children, the poverty of this village, their defenselessness against this horrible, unjust power. It's all just broken and flawed and horrifying. And you got to wonder, what help are we given to live in this world where such tragic occurrences do happen? We all know none of us is sheltered from the possibility of, as the story Val told earlier, of a young man in the streets doing his Christmas shopping suddenly struck down with some catastrophic medical event. We all know, as Karen shared, young man escapes from Aleppo, surrounded by violence. His brother-in-law has died from shrapnel wounds, leaving his sister, his wife widowed, and Badr's sister immigrating to Canada alone with three young children. It's a painful, broken world we live in. And sometimes when you look at the events, it can be profoundly confusing. And we want to celebrate light and goodness and truth and beauty, and it seems sometimes that all around us we see darkness. The writer of the letter to the Hebrews recognizes the reality of suffering. And then, speaking of Jesus in chapter 2, verse 18, he says of Jesus that he himself was tested. And because he was tested by what he suffered, he is able to help those who are being tested. The word tested there is not a test in the sense of pass-fail. It's a test in the sense of trial. And we all know we have had trials, and life brings trials into our lives. But the purpose of a trial is not to break us. It's not to defeat us. The purpose of a trial is not to grind us down. The purpose of a trial is that we might do what Jesus did in his trial. Jesus responded to his trials saying, I will put my trust, my confidence, I will put my trust in him. I will trust in God, no matter how dark life may seem, no matter how difficult and painful the realities around me in the world, no matter how confusing life may often seem, I choose to put my confidence in some power, some force of life, something greater and more true and more real than what I see in the circumstances around me. It's a tough lesson. And there's no easy way to learn it. This is I can't think of the number of people over the last few days, for which I'm very grateful, have recommended to me that I watch The Two Popes on Netflix. And I kept thinking, those guys are weird. Like, who wants to watch a movie about two old men sitting around talking to each other? Seriously? Like, who wants to do that? But I guess since it was a little bit of a break time after Christmas, and our daughter has Netflix, so we cranked it up, and Heather and I sat and watched this movie the other night, and it is deeply touching. It is powerful and beautiful. And what it is, really, is two men talking about two popes, one about to be pope, one who's trying to get out of being pope. How do we trust this process of life? How do we find confidence? These are popes. Like, these are people who are supposed to, you know, kind of cruise at an altitude a little different from the rest of us. And they struggle. And they wrestle. And they find themselves completely bewildered. Man, if the pope doesn't know what's going on, who the heck does? And they're as confused by life and by their circumstances as any one of us has ever been. And they're not sure they know the right way forward. And so they do what trust does. Trust puts one foot in front of the other and just keeps moving forward. Trusting that there is at the heart of all this confusion and all this chaos and all this bewilderment, trusting that there is a presence, a reality, a source of life and goodness that holds us and cares about our well-being. Just thinking about all of this, and Heather, of course, had no idea what I was thinking about. who could have any idea what I was thinking about? And so she got up this morning, and she reads at night, you know, when I'm trying to sleep. And so then she comes down in the morning with all these great things that she's read. And this is, I don't know if any of you know the California kind of spiritual teacher named Adyashanti, but he's been around for quite a few years. And Heather was just dipped into something, a book of his called The Most Important Thing. And it really resonated with what I was thinking about this morning. So I'm going to read you a little chunk. Adyashanti writes, "No matter how we come about it, no matter how we come about it, we can trust in something that is beyond our current experience, beyond our current knowledge, and beyond mind. We can trust in something beyond our current experience, beyond our current knowledge, beyond mind. This resource of great wisdom and love, this faith is rooted within our being. It feels like grace. It feels like something extraordinary. This is not something we are taught. So by the time someone talks to us about it, it seems abstract. Really? Trust? What are you talking about? I get what you were saying, but I do not quite get how to do it. Can you tell me how to go about this?" What a great question, eh? How do you go about trust? If I were to create a 3-point plan about how to move beyond confusing moments, it would look something like this. 1, stop and feel where you are. Stop struggling to get out. Stop looking for security and stop anxiously reaching for the answer or the resolution. 2, feel the presence of that moment and let yourself inhabit the quieter part of your being by being willing to not know and to stay in an insecure, unclouded inner atmosphere. 3, open to a new vision, to something that is not a repeat of the same old way you have done things, which never worked. You must be open and listen. If we were to talk about it in the old language, we would say, listen to the whisper of God. We need trust. You know, we're driving in the dark a lot of the time. We were coming home Christmas evening from having had a lovely light-filled Christmas evening with our family in Brentwood. We were driving along West Saanich Road in the dark, it's nighttime, and all of a sudden the dashboard starts flashing alarming warnings. And the steering wheel stops, the power steering stops power steering. And the brakes stop power braking. And the headlights in the car go out. And I'm going, something's bad's happening here. This is cataclysmic. And I coast to the side of the road. And just when I get onto the edge of the road, poof, the whole thing dies. No more car. So we figured it all out, left the car there, got home, called the tow truck the next day. They towed it into Subaru. Subaru eventually, the day after that, gets back to us. Rats. Did you tell me about this the other day, Larry? You did. It's your fault. You told me. If I hadn't known, it wouldn't have happened. Like, seriously, how do you prepare for that? How do you get ready and say, okay, I'm going to make sure no rat ever gets inside my car and choose up all the wiring so that when I'm driving home on Christmas Day from a beautiful dinner, my car dies? You know, you can't prepare for that. You just can't. So you have to trust that it's going to be okay. And you know, when I was coasting at the side of the road, I thought, oh my goodness, my life is over. This is just catastrophic. But it turns out it wasn't. You know, the next day, some really nice tow truck guy came along and towed my car for $172, but whatever. That part's just money. Maybe Marcus Schlag's going to pay for it anyway. He works for ICBC. So you just got to find that quiet place inside and take a deep breath and say, even here, I can trust that there is a goodness and a beauty at work in life that gives me confidence to put one foot in front of the other. Amen.